Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, August 31st, the final day of August, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCoury, in for Avi Wolfman Arendt. Cherry, 2026 is the worst year for measles in the United States in more than three decades.
Wow.
There's been more than 2,700 cases this year, and that's more than all of last year at this point in the year. The numbers are being driven by outbreaks in Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Wisconsin, and it's really in Lancaster County that we've had the epicenter of the outbreak in Pennsylvania. So that's what we're talking about on the show today, Cherry. What's going on the ground in Lancaster? We now have a political controversy around whether or not this outbreak has caused what we're calling measles-related or measles-associated deaths. So we're going to get into the political controversy. We have two commissioners from Lancaster County to give their input on that. But let's talk also wider about just the surge in measles cases that we're seeing across the country, where that's coming from, what we can do about it. So we have a vaccine expert on later in the show to talk about that as well. It's been a big story in 2026, Cherry.
Absolutely. And of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, because, you know, this may seem like it doesn't affect everybody, but we have hundreds of cases here in Pennsylvania. So we'd love to get your thoughts. What's your reaction to the return of measles and declining vaccination rates? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTube viewers, you can leave your comments in the chat. And yeah, and hopefully, you know, at the end of the show, the second half of the show, we'll have an expert on. So if you want to throw a question in there, we'll pose those questions to our expert as well.
Yeah, but first, our trio of local news stories, Cherry, as always, story number one.
Yeah, the owner, or I guess a dealer who services several Freedom Fuel gas stations, you know, the brand that has been promoted by President Donald Trump. Well, that company just got sued for not paying for $4 million worth of gas. Yeah, shout out to the New York Times for this reporting. The lawsuit was filed just days ago by Mansfield Oil Company in federal court right here in Philadelphia. The suit names KRSM, a foreign company that does business in South Jersey, and it works with several Freedom Fuel Network locations as well as the company's CEO. And Mansfield claims that the company bought around 1.1 million gallons of gas between May 21st and July 7th from their fuel transfer station in Delaware County. That gas costs around $3.9 million, or around $3.59 per gallon, right? And according to the complaint, KRSM sold at least some of that fuel purchased from Mansfield to Freedom Fuel stations, which were able to sell their gas at a lower cost than competitors because they stiffed Mansfield for the bill. Now, mind you, Mansfield admits that they had some invoicing issues and didn't send the bills out right away. They sent them out in July, but it claims that KRSM said that they would pay, but they have since failed to do so, and since they filed this court case. And note that Freedom Fuel is not named as a defendant in this case, but Freedom Fuel has an estimated 25 locations in our region, you know, Kevin, and they were selling their gas anywhere from 40, 50 or more cents cheaper than competitors. And so far, a judge has granted the plaintiffs in this case a preliminary injunction. They're forcing KRSM to keep at least $2.7 million in their bank account until this case proceeds. So this is sort of building up. And by the way, I should mention that the president, Donald Trump, does not own Freedom Fuel stations, but the chain was heavily promoted by the president and the White House on social media. And the White House has said that the administration has had zero dealings with KRSM.
Right. So we've been watching this story unfold. Obviously, gas prices have been high for everyone. We've all been trying to deal with this. And then along comes this Freedom Fuel. And it's like, how are they making money? How are they turning a profit? What is the business model here? And we've all been, I think, waiting to find out. And now you have this allegation that there's a $4 million payment that wasn't made. And so, you know, can you connect the dots and say this is how they're somehow selling fuel for less because they weren't going to pay for it. But it's messy. It's legal. It's an accusation at this point. Mm-hmm. It's going to get itself worked out in the court system. And, you know, we will continue to follow this story because it's just fascinating from a business point of view. What's going on with this chain?
It is. And I actually saw a couple of chains. They were only a few blocks from each other in Northeast Philadelphia, and they were like 50 cent cheaper. And right. Everybody's like wondering, how can you get away with selling gas this cheap? And for a while, it was even cheaper than that. Right. But they had to raise the prices slightly. And so people are wondering, right. Is this the reason why?
And the experts all along have been saying that they only can do this for so long. At some mm-hmm. point, a shoe will drop on this. And I guess we'll see
shoe?
If this is the shoe. Yeah. Story number two. One of the big rulings out of the Supreme Court this year, Cherry, you may remember, overturned mm-hmm. the law that limited how much money political parties can spend in coordination with candidates. So there's kind of been this, you know, political game over the past few decades where you could give money to a super PAC and the super PAC could spend as much money as it wanted, but it couldn't coordinate directly with a candidate. Mm-hmm. And the most recent ruling essentially said, that's nonsense.
You
can directly yeah. coordinate. Let's not even like, yeah. pretend anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're still learning how that will affect the national elections this year.
Yeah.
But another open question has been, how is this going to affect local elections? So shout out to the Inquirer and reporter Sean Collins Walsh for looking into the situation in Philly, which has very tight restrictions on how much money individual donors can give to candidates. So Philadelphia is like kind of an outlier in terms of like its rules around elections and has very strict rules, including an individual can donate to a candidate is $3,700.
Yeah.
So now if this federal change applies locally, same, you know, it's the Wild West where, you know, anybody could come in and give money to a PAC or a party. And obviously the Democrats are very, much in charge in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what is going to happen to local politics if, Cherry, and there's kind of a big if here, if that federal Supreme Court ruling, it turns out, does apply to Philadelphia. And it seems like all that is still being kind of debated by the local elections officials, and the city ethics board, which oversees elections, is saying they are going to really start looking at this and come up with some sort of determination this fall mm-hmm. on how this will all play out.
And I'll tell you this, Kevin, when I read this story and I saw this ruling and I read about how big of an impact it could have, right? All I thought about is how many voters are just fed up with politics generally, right? This is why so many people want to separate the money. This means that those in power can stay entrenched in power as long as they go lockstep with the party that's in power. And it'll make it so much harder for someone to run against the political machine. And I think about that third district race mm-hmm. and how all the comments that they were so upset about how big money was just thrown into politics and they didn't like it. And so then you have this kind of a ruling that will make it a little bit easier for parties to sort of stay entrenched in power.
And, you know, the Philadelphia Democratic Party has been seen, you know, historically as a very powerful machine. But
yes,
we've seen the cracks in the facade, and the third district race is a great example where Chris Rabb mm-hmm. won without the party backing. And I think there's a question here of, will the party regain some muscle if it's able to get more money and collaborate with its candidates? And the analysts say it's really the incumbents and the party itself that could win potentially if it's found that this federal ruling applies locally.
So we'll be looking for that ethics discussion
yeah.
about this.
Story number three.
A West Philadelphia native who started his own water ice company out west is now taking his cool treats to Disneyland. Yay! Hmm. Love this story in Philadelphia Magazine about Lemire Mitchell, who grew up in West Philly. He started out as a tattoo artist in the city, moved to California to grow that business out there, but really started missing water ice. So he decided to start a food truck. And before he did that, he came back to Philly and he learned the business at Fred's Water Ice in West Philly. He became an apprentice there. He became a water ice apprentice. He learned about how to get the texture just right, how to master the scoop. Because, you know, that scoop is very important. And Fred's liked him so much, they sold him the equipment at a very cheap price. He goes back to Cali. And in 2017, he opened up a food truck called Happy Ice, which was basically a liquid nitrogen ice cream truck. He sold neon rainbow colored water ice, and he became a huge hit out in LA. And fast forward in 2021, Disney reached out and he started these pop-ups at Disneyland in Cali. It all went well. And this summer, Hoppy Ice opened a brick and mortar in the Disney district, becoming the first Black-owned dessert shop at the downtown Disney district. So it's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. What I love is, like, there's so many expats from the Philly region all across the country, and anytime they can get a little taste of something that reminds them of home, mm-hmm. it's so exciting. Like, I lived out in California for a bit, and so, like, everybody knew, oh, that's the cheesesteak spot that, like, is kind of like Philly cheesesteak. Or there's the pretzel spot you can get, or the breakfast sandwich spot. So the same with water ice. It's like, you got to find your thing out there.
And shaved ice is not water ice, and Lemire knew that, and so kudos to him on bringing the gem out there. And so this is a pretty serious show. We're going to be talking about measles. We have two Lancaster County commissioners coming up. Don't go anywhere. This is Studio 2. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCoury in for Avi Wolf-Manero.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Last week, Governor Josh Shapiro and the State Health Department announced the first measles-related deaths in the Commonwealth in over three decades. Both were in Lancaster County, and one of the victims was a newborn baby.
The news quickly turned into a political battle. Health and Human Services Secretary RFK Jr. and other critics accused Governor Shapiro and state health officials of misleading the public and using the news for political gain. Lancaster County Coroner Stephen Diamantoni disputes that measles was the cause of the baby's death. Here he was yesterday on WGAL.
One case that we were investigating was counted as one of the measles-related deaths, but that individual died as a result of a laceration to the spleen.
And all this confusion worries health officials who see growing mistrust and a rise in vaccine hesitancy as measles infection spread. So today, we'll get two perspectives on the Lancaster County deaths and the growing measles outbreak there. We'll first talk with Lancaster County Democratic Commissioner Alice Yoder, who was a critical care nurse and a hospital executive. And then we'll hear from Lancaster County Republican Commissioner Josh Parsons. And of course, as always, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What's your reaction to the return of measles and declining vaccination rates? You can give us a call and share your thoughts at 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTubers, you can keep those comments coming in the live chat.
Commissioner Yoder, we have you there on the line. Thank you so much for joining us today and taking time out of your schedule. Before we get into the politics of it all, can you just help us understand what life has been like in Lancaster County the past month or so, like with this outbreak happening? Is this a daily concern in people's lives? Like, what is life like right now on the ground?
Yeah, thank you for having me, first and foremost. But it's just been, people are very concerned. I think people weren't really keeping track of the low vaccination rate that we had. And when we heard about measles occurring across the country, and not thinking about how it would really impact us now. And as the numbers increase, people are being more and more concerned and paying attention to the vaccination numbers and how many people are vaccinated.
And has that been a challenge for a long time in the county, the vaccination rate? And has something changed in the past year or so? Like, why all of a sudden, from your point of view, has this become such a big issue?
Yeah, so it's been gradually, our vaccination rate has been gradually decreasing over a couple of decades. I was the director of community health back in 92 when we had the outbreak of measles in our county as well. And I oversaw a vaccination clinic that opened up at a couple of fire halls. And there were people lined up that, you know, weren't aware that they needed to get vaccinated and wanted to get vaccinated at that point. And so by, you know, another decade later, our vaccination rates as a whole county was up near 98% to 99%. And again, that varies based on geographic area. But we got our vaccination rate up pretty high. And I would say about 10 years ago, we started seeing that decrease somewhat. And then post-COVID, even further.
Yeah. And right now, Lancaster County has over 200 measles infections. There was word of two measles related or measles associated deaths. You know, Commissioner, I'd love for you to just tell us what you know now with regard to those measles related deaths, whether or not there has been any new information. Just tell us what you understand in connection with those deaths.
So we have as much information as the general public has. Just know that Lancaster, the state of Pennsylvania, has 7 county health departments. Lancaster County does not have a health department. So that means that we as county government do not have public health authority. So we don't have the ability to see any more detail than anyone else would in a community. So we know what the PA Department of Health is putting out to the general community about the 2 individuals that have died from measles or associated deaths from measles, and understand that they are releasing as much information to us and to the public that they can, at the same time maintaining individuals and families' confidentiality.
Yeah. And I wanted to just follow up with you because you weighed in on this. And I know that you wrote specifically in response to some things that your fellow commissioner, Josh Parsons, had to say. And you said that he intentionally sowed misinformation and doubt in a trusted public health agency. And you called that dangerous. Please tell us why you decided to weigh in on this, given the fact that Lancaster County does not have direct information. What you are learning comes from the state. Tell me why you decided to step in and say something in response to the back and forth that was going between the governor and the Health and Human Services Secretary and others in the mix.
Yeah, so it goes along with what I basically said earlier, too, was that the state gave us as much information as they felt that they could provide without endangering the identity of those individuals that have died, and also to protect the families. And, in various counties, based on the information that they would put out, could make a difference here. I think having the 2 deaths, first and foremost, we are mourning with the families of those 2 individuals and very sad for them. And the attention has been turned, I believe, politically. And I have not done a lot of whether I agreed or disagree with my colleagues, have not come out publicly in a written statement about some things. I've spoken publicly, of course, in work sessions and things that we've done that are public. But this is dangerous to me, because I think just by saying that we need to have more information and they should be giving us more information, to me, implies and is doubt that we should start doubting what the information is. And there's no reason to doubt them. They know legally what the state should be doing and can do, but they also know that every individual expects government, whether it's local, state, or federal, to protect their confidential information. We expect that to happen. And then we look towards at those different levels for our information to be protected. And that is what the state is doing in my mind. Yeah. Is they're protecting the confidentiality.
Just from a public discourse communications point of view, I think it's hard for a listener to think, why doesn't the county and the state why can't they get on the same page on this? I know that they're not required to, but it just sets up this conversation and adds, confusion when you have the state saying one thing, the coroner saying something, then the commissioners are jumping in. Like, shouldn't there have been a conversation ahead of time with everybody where we could all get on the same page about what the facts are?
Well, I think we know the facts. At the press conference, we have the facts. So I think they're pretty clear. And I think the main focus we should have is focus on that measles are safe, they do not cause autism, and we really encourage everyone to check with their family doc and pediatrician and get vaccinated, if not for yourself, for the people around you, vulnerable populations that cannot get vaccinated. I think that's the message that we should be focusing on.
And as we wrap up, Commissioner Yoder, I just wonder, is this really about distrust? Because it feels like from the public standpoint, you have a fellow commissioner, there's a lot of distrust, it feels like, between Republicans and Democrats, between the states and the federal government. How do you bridge that gap?
Boy, that's a really good question. I just try to focus on what we need to do as a community and not make this political. This is about people's health and well-being and safety. And we know in the past when we didn't have measles under control that people were getting really sick. We know that our hospitals right now are increasing the number of individuals that have pneumonia and are on ventilators. And that's been the history. When people are unvaccinated, that's what can happen. And this is so serious. And that's what we need to focus on.
Thank you, Commissioner Alice Yoder. That was Lancaster County Democratic Commissioner Alice Yoder. We're going to say goodbye to you now. We're going to welcome in just a moment Josh Parsons, who is a Republican Lancaster County official. But, Cherry, we've been getting some
Yeah,
great
we've been getting a
comments
lot of
from our
comments.
Listeners.
Let me read a few. Rachel on Facebook says, I have a 44-year-old nephew who has leukemia. It burns me up that he has to be afraid of being infected because of misinformation from the government and anti-vaxxers. In the case in Lancaster County, I see an opportunity for an education campaign to encourage vaccination if it were working with a respected person in the community like a pastor. Stephen on Facebook says, it's a bit scary. I was vaccinated when I was a child and never had the measles. Thank goodness for that. And last but not least, we'll talk. Ruth says, when I was a kid, I had measles, chickenpox, and mumps at different times, and I would never want anyone to have to deal with the pain, sickness, and itching involved in those diseases. When vaccines came into use for them, I rejoiced that no other kid would have to suffer
as
I had.
Let's jump in now with Josh Parsons. Thank you for joining us from Lancaster County today, Commissioner Parsons. You're a Republican. You heard your Democratic colleague there. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to what's been going on in Lancaster County in recent weeks?
Hey, Terry and Kevin, good to be with you. Thanks for having me. I think the big concern is the governor came in a week ago and gave this press conference, and really there was no transparency around the information provided. They indicated that there were two measles-associated deaths. And the only information they provided was that the individuals were unvaccinated. They provided no other information. And so my position throughout has been, we just want more information, not the specifics on who the people were, but to release more surrounding information, because the reason there is distrust is because everything we went through during COVID, and there was the trust was broken between public health authorities and government. And so as soon as this happened, we started getting calls from all over. There was great media interest and also great interest from the public. And we had no information to give them. And much of the media, local and national, actually said these were measles deaths. And that was not accurate. They were measles associated deaths. And we weren't sure what that meant. So I became
so the issue here, I guess, just to get into the medicalness of it all, is did measles directly cause the death, or did measles affect this newborn's spleen in a way that then caused the death? And that might sound like splitting hairs to some people, Commissioner Parsons. Like, at the end of the day, if there weren't measles in the body, the baby would not have died, right?
No, that's not correct. The facts that we have on the record from the coroner are that measles did not contribute to this death. And so I've said all along, there is nuance to this, and I'm open to being wrong, but the coroner and the forensic pathologist who conducted the investigation have said the opposite. So we're saying, well, okay, state, how did you come to the conclusion that you've come to? And the only reason we know about that first case, the infant, is because I dug into this, and then the coroner provided some information. We have no information still on the second case. And in fact, the law says that if someone dies from the measles, it must be reported to the county coroner. So either the second case doesn't exist, or somebody is in violation of the law. And that's why it's important when they had this press conference and it set off a firestorm of interest, that they provide enough relevant details around it that people can make smart decisions.
And I wonder, what is your response to, Commissioner Yoder's, argument that this is really about privacy? This is really about allowing families who have had suffered tragedy really deal with that in a private manner versus, interrupting that process. Your thoughts and response to that. How much information do you think the state should have provided?
Well, everyone has agreed that the family's privacy should be respected. What we're talking about is releasing some more general information around this case.
Like what?
For example, how did the state come to this conclusion? The coroner has stated with a lot of specific detail about how they came to their conclusion. The state is saying that basically this is measles and everything else around it is top secret. Well, that doesn't fly anymore after COVID. You have to actually provide the people information. And they've provided no information around the second guess, their second case. So we need that if people are to make smart decisions for their health, for their health and the health of their family.
And my follow-up to you, Commissioner, is how do you sort of bridge this gap? And I asked Commissioner Yoder the same question, where there clearly is a big, you know, big distrust between parties here. You got Republicans on one side not trusting the state, and then the state not trusting the federal government. And yet, and still in Lancaster County, sir, you have 200 people who are infected with the measles. How do you sort of, you know, put that aside, the differences aside, and really just focus on the health, the public health issue that your county is dealing with?
I actually don't think it's a party thing. And here's an example. Commissioner Yoder and I were co-chairs, bipartisan co-chairs of a task force called Joining Forces, which was to take on the opioid overdose issue in Lancaster County. This started back in 2017 before she was even a commissioner. And that task force was really successful. In fact, it reduced the overdose.
But it feels like now when you have Republicans on one side of this argument and Democrats on another side, from the public view, it feels very political. How do you respond to that when folks are in the middle and their public health is at stake?
It's not. In fact, I have Democrats who want more information too. I think everybody wants transparency around this. And it is strange who, you know, Alice, who I like and respect, we've been very much on the same page on public health, and we're not here. And the only reason I can think of is because, you know, the governor doesn't want to share more information. Well, that's not the right answer in public health. If you want to build trust, you have to be transparent about the things you're saying.
If we could just widen out a second, you know, some people will see this outbreak in Lancaster and the rise in cases and the decline in vaccination rates, and they'll look at, you know, some of the things that, you know, RFK Jr. has said historically, and they'll lead to the conclusion that, you know, he's spread information that is incorrect, that is causing this outbreak, and is now something that your county is dealing with. Do you see that as a direct cause and effect? Like, how do you account for the rise in cases in Lancaster? What's driving this?
Well, there's a couple things going on. I mean, one is we have a large Plain community, Amish and Mennonites. Many of them choose not to get vaccinated. Some do. That is their right as American citizens, and you may disagree with it, and we may believe that people should get vaccinated. But that is their right. That's always been the case. Do I think that distrust in public health has grown? Yes. And what can you attribute it to? You can attribute it directly to what we experienced during COVID. And I will say that Democrats and Republicans alike who I talked to were very dissatisfied with what happened during COVID, right, especially under Governor Wolf.
You mentioned
you can point right to that, directly to that.
The Amish, the Mennonite community, I mean, that's been the case for decades, like you said, but something changed recently. We're having this outbreak, and is it time for more local officials to come together and say, like, we need a vaccination drive. We need to get this under control. We need to do something about it.
Well, we have a very robust public health system in Lancaster County. We have three major health systems. We partnered with them. The thing I just mentioned, Joining Forces, we partnered with them. So anybody who wants to get vaccinated in Lancaster County certainly can, and many people are who weren't already. But the issue is much deeper than that. It's the public health distrust that was created during COVID. And, you know, some people don't want to talk about that, but that is real, and it's not a partisan issue.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much. That is Lancaster County Republican Commissioner Josh Parsons, who just spoke to us about what's happening with the measles outbreak and the measles associated deaths in Lancaster County. Thank you so much for being here. After a quick break, we'll be back with more on the measles outbreak. And we have vaccine expert Paul Offit from CHOP, who will give us a wider perspective. This is Studio 2. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCoury in for Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We've been talking about the measles outbreak in Lancaster County and the two measles-related deaths there. There's a political fight now over how to classify those deaths, and Lancaster is the epicenter of the outbreak in Pennsylvania.
Yes, and with us now to talk about the controversy in Lancaster and surging measles cases nationwide is Dr. Paul Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center. He's a pediatrician and an attending physician in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Dr. Paul Offit, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And as always, we want to hear from you. What's your reaction to the return of measles and declining vaccination rates? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or drop a comment in the live chat on YouTube and Facebook.
And so, Dr. Offit, we wanted to sort of start this part of the conversation by having you strip away all the politics involved in this. And based only on the medical facts that are publicly available, what can we responsibly say and what can we not responsibly say with regard to these measles-associated deaths, specifically with regard to the infant and with regard to the other person who we know very little about?
So I think the Pennsylvania Department of Health could have made this easier for everybody. When there were two deaths in West Texas last year, we knew that there was a six-year-old girl and an eight-year-old girl. We knew they were unvaccinated. We knew that they died of measles pneumonia. That didn't give away any other information about those two girls. We could have done the same thing here, but didn't. So we're left to guess. And when you're left to guess, when you have this void, that's when the conspiracy theorists jump in and say that this was a hoax and people are misrepresenting things for political gain. So it's really hard. The only thing we really know about is that infant. We know that the infant died in the first day of life. We know that the mother had severe measles, so severe that she had to get intravenous fluids for her severe measles-associated dehydration. We know that the child was born with measles and acquired measles while in the womb. We knew that the child had measles virus in lungs. We also know that measles virus can affect the spleen. We know that and cause splenic fragility by thinning the capsule. And we know this child had a ruptured spleen. I don't see how the coroner can confidently say that measles had nothing to do with this. I think the better question is, would this child be alive if neither the mother nor he were infected? And I think the answer to the question is probably yes. So it's just gotten tangled up in all this, and it's too bad. We know nothing about the other case.
Yeah.
We do know that there were at least 400 cases and that there were two deaths, and that's a death rate of 1 per 200 for a virus that has a death rate of 1 per 1,000.
Yeah,
so there is no doubt in my mind this outbreak is much worse than is being described.
And so that's my quick follow-up before we zoom out even more, because we kept hearing this language and measles associated death versus died from measles. If you could quickly explain the difference, are we splitting hairs here, or is there really a legal significance, a medical significance to that difference in language?
I think we're splitting hairs. I think a physician will also often say, for example, that someone dies from measles-associated pneumonia or measles-associated dehydration or measles-associated encephalitis. I think that with all the information we have, it's very hard to say that this child didn't die from his mother's infection with measles, right, his in utero infection with measles, and his being born with measles. And we know nothing about the other case. It would help if we knew that. But again, you know, this virus causes a lot of suffering, has caused a lot of hospitalization, and these two deaths. And I just think we're missing the forest from the trees a little bit by focusing so much on these two deaths.
I'm just curious if you have any insight in how the state gets its information versus how the county is getting information. It's just confusing to me, and I think others, how the state can come out and say one thing and the coroner can say another thing. And it's like, where is the information coming from and why aren't you on the same page?
I don't know. It's a mess. I agree. You hear one thing from the coroner, another thing from the commissioner, another thing from the Department of Health,
yep,
and another thing, and something sort of slight modifications from the governor. It's far more confusing than it needs to be. It wasn't this confusing in West Texas because they gave you the three pieces of information you needed to know: age, cause of death, vaccine status.
Yeah. Okay, so if you were whispering in the ear of the Department of Health, you'd have had a different communication strategy for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, we'd love to hear from you. I want to get a couple of reactions from our listener community. And the question of the day is, what's your reaction to the return of measles and declining vaccination rates? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. I want to bring in Jamie from Montgomery County, who's on the line. Jamie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, honestly, I think my question in a lot of ways was just asked. So I'll reiterate it like a comment. I think as a voter and as a citizen, you know, we see trends. Like, we believe that the vaccine rate is creating an uptick in measles cases, but I think a lot of people are trying to assess the consequences of that. And when the left doesn't seem to be talking to the right, when the coroner's office contradicts the state or a physician, it just sounds like a lot of confusion that makes it seem like propaganda. Is there a forum where all these parties can just be put in a room and held accountable together for their own evidence to, like, come to a consensus?
We could host that here on Studio 2.
Yeah.
Journals. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That's Jamie from Montgomery County. Let's bring in another caller real quick. Tom from Glenside's on the line. Tom, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, I believe that vaccinations should be mandatory, considering the way it travels. But my feeling is that if people want to have freedom of choice, they used to have freedom of choice of cigarettes. You want to smoke a cigarette? Fine. But the insurance companies then came out with a policy. If you're going to smoke cigarettes, your policy is going to increase to cover the expenses that they would have to follow up with as a result of the illnesses that smoking provides.
Thank you. That's Tom from Glenside. And I think, you know, the difference a little bit with vaccinations, we're talking about public health because one person's decision could affect someone else's. And so would love to hear from you, you know, Dr. Paul Offit, just your reaction, because we heard from the commissioners. We've talked about this vaccine hesitancy that has sort of taken root in Lancaster County. The vaccination rate has gone down over the past decade or so. Your thoughts on why that might be, based on what you've seen across the country, and your reaction to the current outbreak situation that we're seeing, not just in Lancaster, but all throughout Pennsylvania, when we have 16 cases last year and over 450 this year.
Well, when he says freedom of choice, freedom for whom? Remember that there are millions of people in this country who can't be vaccinated. They depend on those around them to protect them. So is it your right to catch and transmit a potentially fatal infection? I think when you see what happened in West Texas and when you see what's happening now in the Lancaster County area, both of those are Mennonite communities which generally have been under-vaccinated. But we eliminated measles by the year 2000, even though those communities were still under-vaccinated. The reason is they were protected by the surrounding counties that were highly vaccinated. Once that started to fade, once that started to erode, then they were especially vulnerable. And that's why you're seeing these outbreaks. Same thing in Spartansburg with the sort of generally highly religious communities there, Utah. So that's what's happening. It's really hard for me to watch this because, I mean, I'm a child of the 1950s. I had measles. At that time, there were 3 to 4 million cases of measles every year. There were 48,000 hospitalizations from pneumonia, dehydration, encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain. And there were 500 deaths a year. Measles can kill you. And I think that not only did we eliminate measles from this country by the year 2000, we eliminated the memory of measles. And I think that's the biggest problem. People don't remember how sick or dead that virus can make you.
Yeah. And when we just had the Republican commissioner on a moment ago, I was, you know, asking him what he thought accounted for the rise in cases, and he was kind of pointing back to a general mistrust that he says he saw during the COVID era that now I guess he's saying is leading more people to be mistrustful of public health and vaccines writ large. Is that the narrative that you would tell, and what's your reaction to that?
Well, certainly during the pandemic, immunization rates declined because people weren't going to the doctors as much, but they fairly quickly recovered by 2022, 2023. Nonetheless, you've seen a continued decline. I mean, it's ironic to me that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our Secretary of Health and Human Services, in July of 2021, was speaking to a packed house in Lancaster County of more than 1,500 people saying, you don't need to get a measles vaccine. Measles is no big deal. I had measles when I was a child, and it was fun. I mean, that's our Secretary of Health and Human Services. He's been to that county three times in the last 5 years preaching against vaccines. And now, you know, he stands back and is criticizing Governor Shapiro or criticizing the Department of Health for the way that they're describing this outbreak. It's at least ironic.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what are some of the, can you sort of help us parse through some of the vaccine hesitancy? Because, you know, we talked about how, you know, the argument is, look, I survived measles, my child can. And so I wanted you to sort of reiterate for people who don't really remember measles, what it does, and then just sort of weigh that against the risk of the MMR vaccine. Because a lot of people really don't, they have misunderstandings, misconceptions about what the risks are with that, and when you compare it to measles itself, for those who may have forgotten in the decades since we thought we had eradicated measles.
Okay, so as a veteran of measles, here's what measles is. Measles starts as a rash initially at the hairline, a blotchy red rash, spreads to the face, trunk, arms, legs. It's often associated with an abnormal chest x-ray. Even though it may not be pneumonia severe enough to get you into the hospital, there's a lot of people who have at least low-grade pneumonia with measles. And then it can cause, as I said before, encephalitis and dehydration. The other thing is that it causes something called immune amnesia. For several years after you've had measles, you're less able to fight other infections. And then there's another problem with measles, where now I've seen five of these cases, which has the fancy name SSPE, which is a chronic measles infection of the brain. Children get measles, they recover, they look fine. 3, 5, 10 years later, they come back with deteriorating handwriting skills, deterioration in personality, descend into a vegetative state from which they die invariably. I don't think people realize that's how bad measles can be. The measles, mumps, rubella vaccine has been around since 1971. It's safe, it's highly effective. And it's hard to watch, for example, our president of the United States has a press conference when he says that when you put these three vaccines together, that it can be, and I quote him, quite lethal, and we need to separate it out into its three component parts. It's just so incredibly wrong to say that. So incredibly hurtful to put people in a position where they doubt a vaccine that can save their child's life.
So I guess where do you think this all goes next? And I guess a big part of the political fight over how we're classifying these deaths is, okay, if it's classified as a measles death, that might wake people up to say it's time to, you know, get more vaccines going, get a vaccine drive and try to turn this thing around. Whereas I guess if there's confusion over how to classify it, you can kind of push that conversation off to the side. Is that how you kind of see how this is going, and what's the next step?
So I think that's the key question. What turns this around? We have had over the last few years a progressive increase in the number of children who are unvaccinated, a progressive increase in the number of parents who are choosing non-medical exemptions to exempt their child from the vaccine. And so we're seeing more and more cases of measles. We've now had 5 measles deaths in the last year and a half. We had 3 measles deaths in the previous 25 years.
Wow. Yeah.
It's that bad. So what does it take? I mean, how many poor children need to suffer and be hospitalized and die before people realize this is a bad choice I'm making? I guess, and maybe people don't understand measles. They just see it as fever and a rash. Because I think if you compare that, for example, in 2022 in Rockland County, New York, there was a 27-year-old man who was paralyzed by polio, never left this country. Now, the strain of polio that paralyzed him only paralyzes about 1 in 2,000 people. So he was the tip of a much bigger iceberg. It was an ultra-Orthodox community, Rockland County. And when he was paralyzed, people in that community got vaccinated because there's something very emotional about polio that apparently is not as emotional for this virus.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious your thoughts on, like, you know, Lancaster's not that far away. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia has a lot of business interests tied to Lancaster. People coming back and forth all the time. What do we in this region need to be thinking about? How should we be acting, preparing? What should we be doing?
Well, the opposite of what we're doing. I think that when you see, for example, Commissioner Parsons or Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just parsing endlessly about whether or not these really were deaths and were they lying to us and they lied to us during COVID, that doesn't do anything to move this forward. I mean, we have to do things to establish trust and put ourselves out there in communities where trusted people are doing the talking. For example, in that Orthodox community in Rockland County, the rabbis were out there doing the talking. Or, I mean, I think you have to find who people trust in those communities, give them the information out there and send them out there to give the best information possible. Because this is a nightmare. I mean, in medicine, there's so much we don't know. There's so much we can't do. This we know. Vaccines are safe. They work. And when you choose not to get them, it breaks my heart to watch this story that was told in The Atlantic today about that little infant who basically was dead at birth, completely preventable.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to read this comment from Danielle, who says, as a pediatrician for more than 30 years, I'm saddened and frustrated by the declining vaccination rates. I've seen children die from vaccine preventable illnesses, and it breaks my heart that children are suffering from the choices their parents are making. I'm trying to learn what parents' concerns are so I can help them make science-based decisions for their children. And so, Dr. Offit, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of us have had our vaccine, and I'm thinking as we move forward, we have 460 cases currently in Pennsylvania. You see those notices every so often that there's been a measles, you know, someone had measles, they were at the hospital, or there were someplace else. If you've been exposed, step up. I want you to sort of tell us about the incubation rate. Maybe you have someone who's unvaccinated in your family. If you hear about this, what should you be doing? Because I understand that there are some interventions if you are unvaccinated and you are exposed that can happen to prevent, you know, measles from, I guess, you know, coming at you full throttle, so to speak. And that's not medical lingo. But, you know, if you could try to help us walk through those steps as people try to figure out, should they be worried and what should they be doing if they are exposed?
Right. So if first of all, if you are either living in or traveling to a county where these cases are occurring and you have a young child, you should vaccinate them, give them the first dose of vaccine at 6 months of age. And then they get their second and third doses at 12 to 15 months and 4 to 6 years of age. If you're exposed to measles, for example, and you say you haven't been vaccinated and now you're exposed to measles, you can get measles specific immune globulin, which can work even after exposure. And the reason is just what you mentioned earlier. The incubation period's fairly long. The incubation period's 10 days, 14 days, 21 days. So that's plenty of time then to intervene with something like immune globulin, which works for these longer incubation period diseases, but not the short incubation period diseases like influenza, respiratory syncytial virus. So that's what you should know. I mean, I don't know if you guys are too young, but in 1991, we had a measles epidemic in Philadelphia where we had 1,400 cases and 9 deaths. I don't know if you remember this, but people were scared to death to come into the city. Schools canceled trips to the city. Wow. Yeah. I mean, the Commonwealth gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to vaccinate down to 6 months of age. It was a nightmare. Mm. And again, centered on two religious communities that chose not to vaccinate, and then it spread out into the surrounding community.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up the hour here, Dr. Offit, I'm just curious, you know, this is an outbreak that the state is still dealing with, that Lancaster County especially is still dealing with. What can, let's say, Governor Josh Shapiro do proactively at this point to lead on this issue, get people together to drive the number downward and hopefully not have any more measles-related deaths?
Okay, here's my wish list. What you should do is you should have both the Pennsylvania Department of Health, in concert with the CDC, go out into these areas and figure out where there are groups that are under-vaccinated, and send clinics to those areas, heavily advertise those clinics who you need to come here and get vaccinated. That's the way it would work well. But instead, it's sort of devolved in this political morass of who's saying to who, when, what's true, what's not true. Yeah. It's just a complete waste of time. It reminds me of the Rand Paul Senate hearings when in theory, we were trying to learn about what we can do better for the next pandemic because there's going to be another pandemic. And instead, it just becomes this sort of diatribe against Anthony Fauci, which accomplished nothing. And that's where I feel we are now.
What's your prescription for ending this political back and forth, this tug of war that we're seeing?
So I think we should go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation and see if they can this kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, it's public health is always to some extent political because it requires resources, but it never has to be partisan. And that's what's happened. It's become partisan, right? You had a Republican on, you had a Democrat on, and they said somewhat different things. And it just shouldn't be that way because in theory, we all have the same interest here, which is the health of our children. We all want the health of our children. I mean, Republicans have children. I know this for a fact because my parents were Republicans. So take care too.
Yeah.
So you said a wish list a second ago. So you named the one thing on the wish list. Anything else? Like what proactively could leaders be doing better?
heavily advertised. So we have a Secretary of Health and Human Services who has a famous name and a platform. Get out there and have a press conference, which he just did with Donald Trump about how measles vaccine was dangerous, and instead have a press conference where he says, vaccinate your child. This is something we can do something about. Same thing with Erica Schwartz, who's head of the CDC. Where is she? I mean, let's get her out there. And just if daily, if necessary, talk about how we need to vaccinate our children, because all these measles cases are unconscionable and avoidable.
It's probably not going to go that way, though, Dr. Offit. So what will happen? What's going to happen next?
I think what's going to happen is we're going to see more and more measles cases. We're going to continue to see children and others die from measles until we finally get to the point where we realize this is enough. And I just, obviously, it hasn't been enough yet.
And this is one time I hope you are not right, but unfortunately, you probably are. Dr. Paul Offit, thank you so much for your time and for being on Studio 2.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Paul Offit is director of the Vaccine Education Center. He's a pediatrician and an attending physician in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Today's show was produced by Debbie Bilder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Engineers today, Mike Schiffler and Al Banks. From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Kevin McCory.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks to everybody who called in and wrote in today. And of course, thanks for listening.